Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about furloughs and things related thereto with Bill Bransford, senior partner Shaw Bransford. Is that fair
Shaw
to say?
Shaw Bransford Roth.
Oh, Deborah, yeah. I'm sorry. Anyway, and you have other titles too.
I'm general counsel of the Senior Executives Association, and mostly I'm the managing partner at Shaw Bransford and Roth.
Okay, and so, we've known each other for an awful
good
long time.
Good long time, Bob.
And actually, this goes
back. It's
good
to come on your show about once a year or so.
Yeah.
So I know you talk about federal employee benefits, and I like to talk about the biggest benefit, which is their job. Keeping their job.
Talking about jobs, furloughs, and we're still going to have a job, but we might not have a job for as many days in the week that we think we should. And is that the definition of a furlough, that they would close the doors, if you will, and say you're going to work 4 days instead of five? Is that how it works?
Well, that's what the news media is talking about. And DOD is talking about 22 furlough days between now and the 1st of October for all of their civilian employees, which would be a 20% reduction in pay, in their gross pay, if they actually do that. Other agencies are talking about a lower number of furlough days, or some agencies are saying they won't have to furlough at all, that they can take the absorb the required budget reductions through other means. So it varies all over government, but this is all the result of the sequestration and the fact that there's mandatory budget cuts going into effect in federal agencies starting last Friday. And anyway, these furloughs seem to be an outgrowth of it, and it's not clear to me how long they're going to last, how long the sequestration is going to last, whether there's a solution in sight. Right now, it doesn't look like there's any movement toward a rapid solution.
And we're going to really get into it, but I think a general comment, because the listeners will hopefully pass this along to other listeners, and they listen actually nationwide and even outside the country. So the definition then is, depending on how much they can cut elsewhere, there may still be this furlough, and that would directly impact the individual not working as many hours and not getting paid.
That's correct. And a furlough, the definition I like to look at it is in the law that gives an employee a right of an appeal to the Merit Systems Protection Board. And essentially, a furlough is when you've been placed in a non-pay status for administrative reasons. And if that goes on for longer than 30 days, then you're into the reduction in force area, and which is even much more complicated. So far, I have not heard any agencies talking about having to actually run a reduction in force to reduce their workforce in order to comply with the sequestration requirements. Now, there are rifts that occur from time to time because of reorganizations, because Congress might take one particular agency and substantially redo its budget, and there may be requirements for rifts, and they have occurred over the years a lot at, for example, Department of Defense in the 90s, when there was a realignment because of the end of the Cold War. There was a lot of people that were put out on reductions in force in the banking agencies as the banking crisis that existed in the 80s and then into the 90s. As that seemed to resolve itself, there were a lot of reductions in force done at places like the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, for example. But we haven't seen many of those in recent years, and I haven't heard any discussion of that on sequestration. But it could get to that point, depending on what happens. And you know, if Congress were to give the president reprogramming authority, and the president were to exercise it, and there's some debate among which side of the political aisle you're on about whether that's likely to happen or not, there could be whole programs that are abolished, and that could lead to a reductions in force, which is much more serious than a furlough.
Okay, and we should say that Bill's law firm is specifically for represent and deals with the federal workforce on both sides of the fence?
In federal employment law, and we have a lot of federal employee clients. We also represent some small federal agencies and a number of management associations. And in particular, I spend most of my time working on issues that concern the Senior Executives Association, which, of course, is the professional association for the senior executive service. And I will tell you, the SES community has been overwhelmed by furlough planning, sequestration planning, and most senior executives that I know are very, very concerned about what's about to happen to their employees. They're very worried about what it means for morale. They're very worried about what it means to their employees, some of whom live paycheck to paycheck, and what their ability to survive this. And they go home every night with how do I make it as easy as I can on my employees?
Okay, let's start there. We're whatever agency, and we're mandated to do a furlough. And let's say we're the SES group or we're the managing group. Is it up to, say, and you and I are in this committee of two for our agency, is it up to us to say Andrew should go, which we can't do without Andrew because he runs the board for the show, but Sam, Sally, or Sue, is it up to us to pick the person, or are we supposed to draw names out of a hat?
That's a really good question, Bob. Who gets furloughed and who doesn't? You know, whenever there's a snowstorm that hits Washington, you know, they use this essential, non-essential, and they keep working on, well, what's the right word? You know, because if you're not essential, then you really are, you know, do you really have an important job if you're non-essential? So they work on emergency, non-emergency, and they've played with that over the years, and they're starting to do the same thing now on furloughs. And what I hear in the press releases that come out, that get repeated on Federal News Radio and other media outlets that care about the federal employees, most federal employees will be furloughed. And it implies that some will not. But that raises an interesting question. Well, who makes that decision? And what if you make that decision and you discriminate? And what if you make it and you pick people you don't like? And so the better choice, the better option for managers and executives is to furlough everyone. Everyone who is furloughable, which is essentially every employee who is not a presidential appointee confirmed by the Senate, is subject to being furloughed. And you simply furlough everyone. And then you don't have run into these favoritism type claims. The other issue is as they negotiate with the labor unions, you know, well, what if you get furloughed and the agency wants you to take every Wednesday off? And you say, no, wait a minute, I'd rather have Friday or Monday so I could have a long weekend. Or I'd rather save my furlough days and take a whole week off and take an unpaid vacation. But have that time. Who makes that decision? And I will tell you that the labor unions right now are negotiating those kinds of issues, an impact and implementation. That's a tough question. If you don't have to furlough everybody and you say some people are so important that they can't be furloughed, then you run into potential claims of favoritism at the Merit Systems Protection Board.
Which usually when you and I come on the show, I'm on both sides of the tennis net. Okay, so as an employee, I might bring that cause of action. But as the manager, what do I do to protect myself in making that decision that Sam goes and not Sally?
Well, if you don't have to, if you're a manager and you don't have to furlough everyone, or you have concluded that some of your people are so essential that they really can't be furloughed, then you make sure you have a very, very well-documented business reason for your decision. Because an employee, is entitled, before they're furloughed, they're entitled to 30 days of notice for this kind of a furlough, the sequestration, which differs from the shutdown furlough. If you remember, every time the government shuts down or there's a threat of a shutdown, employees are furloughed, there's no 30-day notice. It's kind of an emergency situation. But if you can give the employee notice before the furlough takes effect, the law requires you to give them the 30 days of notice. So nobody's getting furloughed until around the 1st of April. Assuming they've got their notice last week. And I understand some agencies gave notices even before the sequestration went into effect, like I think Department of Justice did. So 30 days of notice. Then once you have a furlough day, you can appeal to the Merit Systems Protection Board. And pretty much you're going to lose your case if the agency can show that the furlough was made for a legitimate administrative reason, like needing to cut their budget, unless the employee can prove by a preponderance of the evidence that the furlough decision actually was made for any legal or discriminatory reason, like discriminating based on race or gender or ethnicity, or because the employee was perceived as being a whistleblower or was a whistleblower, those kinds of reasons. If those were reasons why that employee was picked for the furlough, or a group of employees were picked for the furlough, then you might win your case at the Merit Systems Protection Board. Now, that's kind of an abstract of what the law says. For me, I'm sitting here saying if you've got 80% of your workforce being furloughed and you've got a really good reason why the other 20% can't be spared, I don't see any employee winning their case at the Merit Systems Protection Board. I have a hard time imagining as a lawyer a set of facts that would exist that would allow an employee to win. Having said that, those facts haven't occurred yet. They would be subject to somebody at some future date making a decision and the employee coming up with all kinds of reasons why their being picked for the furlough was illegal. So if that happens, you who knows what will happen at the Merit Systems Protection Board.
And we're going to dig into other issues other than just furloughs, you know, how to, if you are caught in it, how to lessen the pain if you can, et cetera. But do you see any class action suits coming out of this?
No.
Okay.
The short answer is no. I don't think the only appeal you have is to the Merit Systems Protection Board. And I don't see, I think I see maybe large groups of people, mm-hmm. maybe unions that might bring in an action on behalf of a large number of employees, that kind of thing. So you see maybe some complicated litigation. And of course, the Merit Systems Protection Board, I think just last week or the week before, issued a press release about its concern. They have no idea whether they're going to see such an onslaught of appeals that basically it's going to cripple the agency because it's a small agency. And you know they have their other workload to deal with. And plus, they have to furlough their own employees because they have the same budget cuts that everyone else does. So it's a class action in the traditional sense where one person brings an action and there's all this punitive damage. I don't see that. I see individual cases maybe grouped together.
Okay. Now, again, you and I are in the room because we have to pick and choose. Are we exempted from the furlough? You mentioned essential and non-essential. Are we considered essential because we're the ones making the decision?
Most senior executives I've heard from don't know the answer to that question. It's probably going to be made by someone at the political level. But most senior executives that I've heard from expect to be furloughed along with the rank mm-hmm. and file employees are anticipating that. And quite frankly, I would think that anybody doing a furlough would want those senior executives to be subject to it as well, which raises an interesting question that the higher you are, the broader your scope of responsibility, to what extent can you really take the day off when you're furloughed?
Okay,
those senior executives that I know, most of them are hooked to their smartphones or their Blackberries, their email accounts, 24/7. And are they really going to not respond to a political appointee that tries to contact them on their furlough day? So interesting questions to see how this is really unprecedented what we're dealing with now.
Okay, let's say I'm not an SESer, and I face the fact that I'm going to be furloughed. And I won't say me, let's say this person. And this person has this work ethic that's very strong and feels that even if they're not going to be paid, they still want to go to work and do what they normally do. Are they allowed to go in on a furlough day even though they're not being paid?
Well, they're not supposed to, is my understanding. So I would say that anything that's absolutely voluntary, any work that you have a choice to do it today or tomorrow, you would not perform on your furlough day, and you would not go into the office. But of course, you know, a lot of federal employees now are teleworking.
I was going there.
So they might have one or two days a week, sometimes more, where they work from an alternate location, usually their home. So they don't go into the office, but does this mean they don't check their emails as well? Does it mean they don't respond to an email? I think it does mean that. An employee who engaged in work on their furlough day when they've been told not to is subject to being disciplined. Now, this raises some very interesting questions because, for example, if you're a government lawyer and you're practicing law in a forum, you know, U.S. District Court or even the Merit Systems Protection Board or EEOC, or you practice before the International Court of Trade or something, and you've got a case that's ongoing, and the judge wants to have a conference call on your furlough day, you don't say, sorry, judge, it's my furlough day. Chances are you're gonna take that call and you're going to participate, and you have an ethical obligation to represent your client, which is the federal agency. So there's going to be some tension between the expectation that you're not performing services on your furlough day and an obligation to perform some services. And it may very well be that this tension could be considered by agencies as they decide, well, who's essential, who's non-essential, who gets furloughed, who doesn't. And, you know, there are large groups of federal employees sitting around grappling with these questions as we speak, trying to answer them within federal agencies, some of which probably have developed some pretty good plans, some of whom are, you know, some groups of employees are still struggling with this.
I would think law enforcement officers, we're going to have a show of force, if you will, on this particular day, and then three or four of the team can't go. They're not lawyers, but they're, you know, gun-toting law enforcement officers, and then the rest of them go, I don't think I want to go in there without them.
Yeah, and they have law enforcement, many of the law enforcement community have what's called availability pay, which gets an extra bounce to their regular paycheck for being available to work 15 to 20 hours of overtime a week, and they're going to be furloughed. And so, you know, this extra work, you know, can they work on their furlough day? And you're right, if there's a team of ATF, DEA, FBI, and they're going to go execute a search warrant, and a couple of them are subject to their furlough day, it takes some extra coordination. I would imagine most law enforcement agencies will be able to work around that or work through that, but it does present some interesting and difficult issues. And my understanding is that the federal law enforcement community is going to be subject to furloughs just like everyone else.
Wow. I hope the IRS is not, at least before April 15th. Well, we're not going to process returns. I mean, they've had a very difficult time because Congress was so late in passing the law. It's just getting the forms done. And so they're behind anyway, and now they're not going to process the returns.
And my understanding is IRS will have furloughs, but not as many as some of the other agencies.
Okay. And I would think Secret Service.
Those are the early returns on that.
I would think Secret Service would not either.
I think they might.
Really?
Yes, I think they might. I'm not, certainly not on the president's detail.
No, that's what I was thinking of, yeah. All righty, so again, I'm the conscientious employee, and I said, listen, I don't want to violate. I've been told I'm not supposed to touch my computer. If I'm telecommuting, I shouldn't be in here on my day off. I don't want to do anything wrong, but if I am going to not work one day, could I work 2 hours extra for the 4 days that I am there?
Well, if you're subject to the Fair Labor Standards Act, where you get overtime, time and a half, if you put in extra time, you're supposed to and probably have an order that you not do that unless you're told to do it by your employer. And you can, in fact, work overtime on your non-furlough day, which means that your agency would be accruing more payments and is trying to save. So they may very well have ordered you no overtime. But theoretically, if it's really important, your boss could order you to work overtime. Now, much of the federal workforce, at least in the Washington area, is not subject to the Fair Labor Standards Act. They're exempt. And those are most of the professional employees, certainly the managers. And I would say, for the most part, federal employees are not. So if you're not subject to the Fair Labor Standards Act, you work overtime and you haven't been told to work overtime, you're not going to get paid for that overtime. And this is something that was litigated a few years ago by a group of lawyers at the Department of Justice who said that they, you know, were traditionally working 10 to 20 hours of overtime a week and not being paid for it. They would get something, an assignment at 4 o'clock on Friday afternoon that was due at 9 o'clock on Monday morning, and there was no way to get that assignment done without spending 10 to 15 hours of on that assignment over the weekend. And they would do that and then basically we were ordered to work this overtime because we got this assignment. There was no way to do it. And the court said, unless you get a specific order in writing to work overtime, your overtime work is essentially volunteered by you. So the exempt from the Fair Labor Standards Act group of federal employees can donate all the overtime they want on their non-furlough day and actually work a 40, 50-hour work week, even though they have that one day that they're not being paid.
Right, but
it's not exactly justice, but it's what the law would allow.
Okay, let's say an individual understands that they're going to be furloughed, they accept it, just for this example.
Well, they have no choice.
Okay, and they have no choice. They say, okay, this is it, but they have some sick leave, and they're just never going to use it. Could somebody say, gee, I'd like to donate my sick leave to my coworker who is financially really between the rock and the hard place?
Well, first of all, sick leave is to be used only for specified purposes. You're sick, one of your children is sick, somebody in your family is sick, or you have a doctor's appointment, or it also can be used for funerals and to go through the adoption process for a child, things like that. There are specific things in the statute. So sick leave is not to be used to overcome a financial hardship.
No, I want to donate it.
In a furlough.
Can I donate?
Even if you're donating it to a colleague.
Oh.
They have to be sick in order to use it. And there is a provision in the regulations for sick leave donation where you can, if somebody has an illness, you want to donate sick leave to them. There's a whole process for doing that outside the furlough. But again, it's somebody who's sick. So to deal with the fact that there's going, and there will be a lot of federal employees who are furloughed who have a significant financial difficulties and trouble making ends meet. But sick leave is not the answer. Now, donating annual leave would be nice if you could do it. That's a little bit more difficult to do, but you certainly... you know, you can't really use your annual leave for furlough day, but you're going to lose that that amount of money. And whether Congress, you know, the other question is, I have read some blogs over the last week or two. There seems to be from the blogs I have read a strong undercurrent of feeling among some in the federal community, some federal employees, that when this sequestration issue is all over, that Congress will reimburse employees for the furlough days that they took. And I think a lot of federal employees feel that that's likely to happen because in the government shutdown arena, it always has. I think the sequestration furloughs are fundamentally different. I think the debate in Congress among those who favor cost-cutting versus those who look at other alternatives is so different from what it has been in the past that I personally think it's unlikely that Congress will authorize back pay for the furlough days. So I think any furlough day that I think that's money lost that federal employees are not likely to get back. So I would not count on it. Now, I could be wrong, and it could be that as this issue gets worked out, hopefully it will be worked out because otherwise it goes on for 10 years. You know, as it gets worked out, there may be some sense of trying to deal with, let's make these employees who've suffered whole. one of the things I think that works against that is that you're going to have anywhere from 0 to 22 furlough days this fiscal year. And what's going to happen next fiscal year if the sequestration is still in effect is anybody's guess.
Okay. Unemployment compensation.
I understand you can apply for it for the amount of the furlough day that you're in.
All right. Now, you mentioned at the top of the show, and I was not fully aware of this, but you're supposed to get a 30-day notice.
Right. For this type of a furlough.
Okay, but how to, again, you and I as the manager or the employee listening to this, either side of the case, how do we know that they got the 30-day notice? And how does the person that says that they didn't get it, we show that this that they did?
Well, you're hopefully going to have an effective HR office that's going to write a kind of a general furlough letter saying, as you know, because of severe budget cuts, we're required to furlough our non-essential employees or whatever they're going to call it. You're in that group. You're hereby given your furlough notice. You will be furloughed effective 30 days from this notice. You have the right to respond to this and give us your input before we make a final decision about the furlough. And the furlough will not take effect any less than 30 days after you receive this notice. And the employee's name will be on that document, and somebody will keep a copy of it somewhere. And when the employee files their appeal, when they actually, the day after they are actually furloughed, starts a 30-day period in which they can file their appeal with the Merit Systems Protection Board, the agency would then be required to tell the MSPB that this is the notice they received and actually provide a copy of it. So it's just a matter of issuing it and keeping it in a place where you can find it later.
And I would think, too, that if they email it, they would have the email record that it was distributed to that person's email. Yeah. You know, whether they opened it or not, it's another story.
Or however they distribute it.
Yeah. Okay. All righty. So now let's look a little bit on the financial side. I'm going to miss one day's pay. Now, what does one day's pay mean? And you mentioned this in the proverbial green room before the show, that there are certain things that are withheld. Social Security for some, but not all. Medicare for all.
The Social Security is not withheld. Their 7% CSRS contributions is not withheld. So all of that, I mean, you've got about 8% right there just in those. Plus, you're going to pay less income tax. So when you talk about 20% of your gross pay is less than 20% of your take-home pay is going to be less than 20% that you actually feel or see. It might be more like 10% reduction or 12% reduction in your take-home pay.
Well, this is where I was going to go with that. That's a great comment because
if you're living paycheck to paycheck and you can't quite make ends meet,
then
you're not going to make
this
ends meet to a greater extent.
Yeah, then don't do this. But there are some people that like medium to large refunds. I long since gave up asking why. But
you're talking about
like
income
it.
Tax refunds.
Yeah. And so for those people, maybe they do their tax return on a program. I hope they don't do it by hand, but they might just say, okay, in this year I'm going to have less income, so I'm going to have less income tax. Maybe I could cut my withholding. No one should mishear that. This is only for somebody that is generally
You are the tax professional.
Yeah, I know. And they're going to say, well, he told me to cut the... I didn't say it. Only if you're going to have an otherwise large refund. Why have the large refund? You might as well use the cash during the year when you need it. So you could cut back on withholding both at the federal and the state level, again, with the assumption that you would otherwise get a large refund. If, like you say, Bill, we're making it paycheck to paycheck, nobody should do what I just said if they're in that situation.
Well, as you make decisions about what kind of withholding to have, you have to make sure that you've complied with the IRS rules and that you have enough withheld. Otherwise, you're going to be subject to a penalty when it comes time to pay your taxes the next year. So that's something to watch out for. But if you've got some wiggle room there and you're really struggling, that is one area to come up with some extra cash on a weekly basis. There's some other possibilities. I mean, you can always borrow money from your TSP if this goes on for a while. you know, the thrift savings plan. And, you know, some people think there's a couple different scenarios. There's the continuing resolution that's going to expire on March 27th. And there's some people that have talked about, well, the working out a deal on the CR that includes ending sequestration and then ending the furlough threat so that by April 1st, it's all over and nobody's been furloughed yet. I mean, that's a great outcome. But they're talking more and more now of neither the Democrats nor the Republicans want a government shutdown. So they're going to let sequestration continue, it looks like. This is the conventional thinking right now. Letting sequestration continue, coming to an agreement on the CR, which means that it will go on for a while. And if it gets to the point where you really think you know, it's going to go on indefinitely and you just can't make ends meet, you can go to your thrift savings plan and you can fairly quickly, I think, get a loan, have that cash paid to you and set up automatic monthly repayments or automatic repayments out of your paycheck to pay back that loan over a 5-year period and pay it with interest to yourself.
With extremely low interest.
You're paying that interest to yourself, yeah, right, as you pay it back. So it's a way of getting over that hump. And it's fairly easy, I think, to the reasons that you would need for to take out a loan from your thrift savings plan are not all that significant. And I think you can borrow a pretty hefty sum that should get most people over their over the sequestration furlough hurdle for as long as it's likely to last. And who knows what that amount of time is. We'll know more as time goes on and we see which political party is winning the debate of public opinion and who wants to cave the fastest.
Okay, there was an email this morning from OPM, Ray Kirk, ever vigilant in informing individuals, and it's actually a TSP fact sheet about exactly what you just mentioned, the opportunity to borrow money. I think there's some other things in it, of course.
Well, there's a financial hardship withdrawal that you can make, but that's for, you know, you've got to actually prove the financial hardship, and then you've got the question there of how much you can reduce. It's a little bit more complicated, and I think it's you've actually got to convince somebody that's justified versus the loan where you just borrow the money.
And as Bill mentioned, you will pay interest, but it's at the G fund rate at the time you make application, which is probably not going to change between now and whenever, which is a very low rate. But when somebody does this and they borrow money, I'm reasonably certain I'm right with this, and they have their money spread 25%, 25%, 25% into four funds, 25% of the loan comes out of each one of those funds. So some of those funds might be doing better than what the interest rate is. So
The C fund's done pretty well the last year.
Yeah.
But not always.
But not always, you're right. So if these are for the money manager people listening. They might want to do an interfund transfer all into the G prior to asking for the loan. The money comes all out of the G. After it's done, then they reallocate it back to the other funds. Now, this is a little
after
aggressive.
The loan's taken out.
Yes, yes. That's just for the financially comfortable, which I'm not, but I read about this kind of stuff. Anyway, was there anything else in that fact sheet, Bill? I unfortunately didn't keep a copy of it.
Well, they also talk about changing your thrift savings plan contribution level as a way of, you know, if you have the matching contributions that you're making and getting the government match for it, you can come up with a little bit more cash in your pocket by changing what you contribute to the thrift savings plan. And any financial planner will tell you to contribute the maximum to your thrift savings plan that you can. And you're being penny wise, pound foolish if you contribute less than the maximum. So it's not recommended that you do that, but it is a way of increasing your monthly cash flow, and you know, if you really feel a sense of urgency. But you really can lose by doing it. Not only do you have to lose the tax advantage status of that money, which is, you know, is pre-tax dollars to the thrift savings plan, but you lose the government match if you're in the FERS program and you get a significant government match, which is a which is, you know, very, very financially worthwhile program. But so those are essentially the three things. When it comes to the thrift savings plan, there's three things: changing your contribution, the loan, and the financial hardship.
Right. And for those that participate in the Roth TSP,
this is, you're going to have to answer this one, Bob.
No, I just, my comment would be, I don't know that I would fool with that one. I understand if you have to have the money, you have to have the money. But Roth, and generally the people, not all, but generally the people that participate in the Roth, I would say would be the younger crowd on up to maybe mid-career. Late in the career, it might cost them too much tax-wise. So, and I'm really beaming my comment out. If you take money out of that, you've compounding, the miracle of compounding has been compromised during your 30-year stay in the Roth TSP. Tell you what we ought to do now, just in case anybody's out there saying, what are they talking about? I need to ask a question. We're here, 202-465-3080, 202-465-3080. I may preface my comment by, today is March 4th, 2013. It's 10:42 a.m. We have about another 15 minutes.
And we are in the second business day of sequestration.
Okay. But don't call us after that time because we won't be here. But you will be able to email us. But why don't we do this? 202-465-3080. And I have to, I don't have to, but I feel that it's important. We had an emailer that emailed into our email, For Your Benefit at NITP, Inc. And he says, my name is, I'm going to leave that blank, I'm 60 years old and left the federal government in 1995, 4 months short of 20 years, taking out a certain amount out of the system. My official separation was involuntary based on the position being eliminated. Do I have to come back into the government to make a redeposit? If so, would I be eligible to retire after I get 4 more months to make it 20 years? Do I have a year? Do I have to work a year before making a redeposit? Would I have to work longer, et cetera? So Tammy emailed me this at 7 a.m., I'm not going to tell you.
I'm glad you're not asking me to answer that question.
I'm glad Tammy hasn't asked me to answer this. And the comment was, this is Tammy's response. This person would need to repay the refunded contribution. Remember, the person took out a chunk of change with interest that was at the following rates. Now, these following rates, there's probably about 24 of them. And if you go back to 86, they were pretty high. They come down. And recently, they're more tolerable. But most of them aren't. To pay a redeposit, he would have to be rehired as a federal employee. This service would count towards the retirement eligibility whether or not the person repays it. But it would only be used to compute his retirement if he makes the redeposit. So this is like law, isn't it, Bill?
It's complicated, yes. And I think another complication is that since the person was involuntarily separated, that person is eligible to be reemployed as a federal employee. And this is important for those who actually retire from government to understand the difference between a voluntary retirement and an involuntary retirement, to where they can, because somebody who voluntarily retires can only be reemployed as a reemployed annuitant. But if you are involuntarily separated, then you can come back as an employee.
Okay, let me just answer the last thing, and we got a phone call. Let me do this quickly. The person would be rehired under a CSRS offset, and if that person stays in the system, they would have to work another year and then could retire. If the person chooses to transfer to FERS, then they could retire at 60 with 20 years. So let's take the caller. Caller, good morning.
Good morning. I just had a quick question about leave accrual. If you're under the sequester and you're taking a one-day-a-week furlough, DOD FERS employee, how is your leave accrual adjusted if you're not working, the 80-hour-a-week they base your leave on?
I believe that your leave accrual is reduced and to account for the furlough. So you would accrue leave at 80% of the normal rate. In other words, if it's based upon either 4, 6, or 8 hours per pay period, and if it's reduced by 20%, so it would be reduced by 20%.
And will that have to be reflected when you're calculating time and grade for promotions?
No.
Other assignments?
No. Time and grade for promotions and credit for towards your retirement for service. The furlough doesn't affect any of that, but it does affect leave accrual. It does affect some of the other benefits.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call.
Appreciate the call.
All righty. Good answer, Bill. I couldn't have done that.
Well, there's been a lot written about this in the last few weeks, and
I try to keep up. I'm a tax finance type, so I become, I won't say lazy, but I always know I can pick up the phone, and certainly I talk to Tammy more than probably Tammy wants to talk to me. But anyway, she's always very generous with her time and very thorough with her answers. All right, so we looked at this. Okay, maybe this happens, maybe it doesn't happen. And we looked at it from the management side. We looked at it from the employee side. We looked at it from the notification side. Then we looked at reality. If we are affected by it, how do we lessen it? If we could, the decrease in our income, and there are certain things that we're not going to get anyway. If we work a day, we're not going to have any Social Security to spend, because they're going to take it out, Medicare and or, like you say, the CSRS contribution. And then there are other things that are taken out, health insurance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So then if we were
the
really...
The full health insurance would come out even if you're furloughed or not.
Right, yeah.
Obviously.
Thank goodness. All right. So then we'd say, well, I still need X dollars to make ends meet, and people have talked about borrowing money from the thrift, and we touched on that, and maybe even maximize the economics of that. And then we talked about, well, if you're not making as much, maybe you don't need as much withholding. So you could have less withholding. And when you are paid, it helps soften this blow. I don't mean to make light of any of it, but if we're faced with it, how do we minimize the hit if we feel that the hit is going to be really rough for us? Because I'm reading some things where people, they don't know what to do. Can they pay the mortgage? There are a fair number of people in today's world that's paycheck to paycheck. And it's easy for me to sit here and say, well, it's only one day a week times four. Well, four times four is some money.
Well, Bob, there's probably a lot of people that would look at what happened to many, many Americans 3 or 4 years ago as we went through the worst of the financial crisis. As a two-income family, would have one of the family members lose their income because they were laid off of a job, and you have a significant financial issue affecting that family. And people struggled, people managed, and you find ways to deal with it. I think that's where many federal employees are now, as they have to restructure their finances, and they have to find a way to make ends meet. And you know what I hear from most people, it involves changing their lifestyle in some way to make ends meet, if that's what they have to do. And we've discussed, I think, the alternatives. Now there are organizations that will be there as a safety net for federal employees. I mean, there is unemployment compensation, things like that, but there is also the Federal Employee Education and Assistance Fund, which is a charity. It's the charity for federal employees, and supported by federal employees largely through the combined federal campaign. One of the things that FIA, as it's known, does is it provides no interest loans for federal employees that have an emergency, like say a one income family has some significant issue and that causes them to be unable to pay their rent that month, or they can't pay their utility bill. FIA will make them a no interest loan, actually pay the utility bill or pay the rent or mortgage payment. And then the employee pays back the loan over the next 10-month period through payroll deduction. So that's, as an employee struggles and has a specific event, an incident They can go to FEA, FEEA.org, and find out information about this no-interest loan program. But there, it isn't just simply, oh my gosh, I've been furloughed, I'm living paycheck to paycheck, I need more money. It's a specific event. And one of the things that FEA, I know, is quite concerned about is as the sequestration goes on and more people are furloughed, they're going to see more examples of people who are in need of these no-interest loans. And there may be a limit to their resources. So those federal employees who are more fortunate, who are not living paycheck to paycheck, I would encourage them, particularly those who feel, have strong feelings of empathy and concern for their federal fellow employees, to contribute to FEA, because we see this as an oncoming safety net that has limits to its resources. Not like the government, where they seem to be able to endlessly borrow. FEA is limited, and they really want to be there to help federal employees. So FEA.org to contribute. You don't have to make a contribution during combined federal campaign time, and it is not combined federal campaign. You can go there. You can make a contribution today, and that money will be there. Eleanor Holmes Norton made an announcement last week that she is donating a day of her paycheck to support federal employees, and she's gone helping the people in her office directly who are going to be subject to furloughs, but she's also donating to FEA. That's the charity that she has chosen to donate to. So I would encourage those who can afford it to make those donations, because there's a whole group of less fortunate that this is the end of the line safety net. If you really are going to be evicted from your apartment, FEA can help, but it can only help to the extent it has resources.
Okay. Are there any sites that publish up-to-date information on furlough activity and
that? The only one that I can think of is OPM, but and you might check places like Federal News Radio and Federal Times and GovExec and places like that, which are covering these events as they unfold and as agencies announce their furlough plans and negotiate with their labor unions and whatever the results of those are. I think they tend to be made news in those communities, in those news outlets.
Okay, I know you're being modest. How about your website?
Fed Manager, yes. We Fed Manager and Fed Agent, fedmanager.com, fedagent.com, weekly newsletters that are absolutely free. And we, of course, publish each week whatever the latest news is that affects.
What are those sites again? I'm a little
fedmanager.com, Fed Manager, all one word, Fed Agent for the law enforcement community, fedagent.com.
So there is information.
Yes, it's all. There's a lot of information out there.
Of course, everybody should listen to the show and tell their friends about the show. But I don't think the show is bad for those. It's a crisp 53 minutes of succinct information. I would say.
Yes. Well, I think we've covered quite a bit of ground here. I don't know. Trying to think. You must have some more questions written down there, Bob.
I had some goofy ones, man. I don't think I'll do the goofy ones, because you'll look at me like you've looked at me in the past, like, well, where did you get that? I remember one of the first shows we ever did, because I was kind of playing on two sides of the tennis court, and I said, well, what about the manager side, or what about the employee? And you kind of looked at me and said, good question. And that was.
But remember that managers are employees too.
Yes. Okay. So. For the folks that would want to email us questions, we're at NITP. Well, let me do the other one. For your benefit at NITPINC.com. For, F-O-R, your, Y-O-U-R, benefit at NITPINC.com. And we'll answer it. Might not be the same day, but I bet it won't be a day or two after. And because there are a lot of questions, we might not know all the answers to the questions, so we'll probably call Bill because he knows everything.
Well, I have my area where I try to stay informed, and I will tell you these types of mass furloughs. I've never seen it before, and there's going to be a lot of interesting questions to be answered, and we're really dealing in uncharted territory.
Okay, so I think we're about, I won't say out of gas, but I think we've done as much as we can do. So if we don't have a caller, and we don't, I think we might just call it a day. But we'll be back next week. So if you and we'll take any question regardless of the subject next week. And I don't know what the subject is next week, but we will be on air. And our phone number again next week, if you want to call us, 202-465-3080. Andrew, thanks for keeping us in line, and we'll see you all next week. Bill, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Bob. I appreciate the invitation.
And let me do this right now. Shaw, Bransford, and Roth.
Right.
Did I make up for that, Deborah?
That's correct.
All righty. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.